Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. And today we're learning about a new project called the La Crosse Welcome Circle. It's an organization aimed at helping Ukrainians who have been displaced by war in their own home country. And we'll find out when some of them could be making their way to our area and how else the community is working together to help them out in their moment of need. And joining us to talk about the La Crosse Welcome Circle are two of its members. First off, let me introduce you to Jan Gallagher. Jan, thanks very much for being with us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you for inviting us. We look forward to the conversation.
And once again, joining us, Rabbi Brian Searle from Congregation Sons of Abraham. Rabbi Brian has been with us before, and so welcome back to Newsmakers, Rabbi Brian.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, Ezra.
So I'm interested, first of all, in learning about how this idea for the La Crosse Welcome Circle came about. I don't know who is better to ask about that, so we'll start with Jan. Tell me about the origins of the La Crosse Welcome Circle.
Well, last spring, a group got together to say, is there something we can do? And actually, Rabbi, you could talk about that earliest moments, because it was really tapping into a model that has a long history, decades long history, of welcoming strangers, of welcoming displaced people, refugees, immigrants, and so forth. And that's HIAS, H-I-A-S. And they have a model for welcome circles that's used around the country. So those early days, Brian, did you want to talk about that?
Just to point out that they've helped people of all religious and national backgrounds, from Hispanic to Eastern European. They brought millions of people over when the Soviet Union collapsed, in the 80s. And we also, as you all know, here in Wisconsin, we took up the cause of 15,000 Afghans who escaped at the last moment from the war in Afghanistan. And now 50,000 of those people, all the people, have found jobs and housing. And it's just so exciting to have seen these people make the transition. A lot of them already spoke English pretty well, but it's just a wonderful thing to be involved with and save people's lives.
And it's an interesting connection with that, really an international organization. And I'm hoping to dive more into that relationship and the history, the amazing history of HIAS later in our discussion. But talking about the specific effort of the La Crosse Welcome Circle, what kinds of services are you hoping to provide to people, Rabbi?
Well, the first issue is we have to find sponsors. And we've got a bunch of sponsors lined up. Sponsors don't mean you're going to pay for all these people's food and clothing and shelter, but they will coordinate, helping them get a Social Security card, helping them apply for food stamps, helping them find housing. And we're so grateful that the community has stepped up to find apartments for these folks and contribute donated from car dealerships, used cars to get these people going. And then there's the opportunity to find jobs. So it's just very exciting to be part of this at a time. You know, the last one, the Afghans were all supported by the federal government. This is strictly a grassroots movement, Ezra. We're doing this all around the country. 146 welcome circles are bringing in these Afghan people, sponsoring them, getting them started, pretty much on their own.
Well, yeah, you mean Ukrainian. Yeah, that's okay. But the welcome circles are designed and actually quite clearly structured to be able to anticipate a variety of needs of the newcomer. You can imagine that every family's different. You know, some may have children, some may have both parents, many of them don't have both parents with them, and finding schools or finding medical attention, it's each family will have its own set of issues. So a lot of what we've done in the last months has been to anticipate what needs might be and identify how we'd solve those problems as they come up. So it is absolutely a community-based effort. There are social services, some social services for which the newcomers are eligible. But I have to say, it's the community response that I think is going to make a big difference. It's the local knowledge that we have that the traveler doesn't have that will make the difference. And after such a chaotic year that they've endured since February, to have a peaceful entry and a relatively stress-free few weeks or months as they get used to their new home, that's what we're looking for.
And Jan, these people, correct me if I'm wrong, but in most cases, these people are pretty much leaving behind everything or might even have left behind everything months before they would end up here.
Absolutely. Many of them are coming from Europe, but not all of them. Some are coming directly from Ukraine. But, 300,000 homes have been destroyed. Many of them fear for their lives, even if their home is still intact, and don't know if their home will be hit in the future.
I think, Jen, that's a very important point. Also to know that their husbands and brothers and sons are being held to fight the Russian army, in Ukraine. So they're not given the same freedom to get out as the families are. So that's another step we're going to have to work on to bring this, reunite those families.
It takes such a toll that, those of us who don't live those experiences on a regular basis really it speaks to our own level of privilege that we don't have to live every day with that awareness that of what these people are going through. You talked about this being a very grassroots effort, a very, you have to find sponsors for all of the people who are coming. And then when they get here, you have to find local resources that can be provided to meet their needs. How do you choose which families to help or is there a large pool of people who are making applications? How does that all work?
I can answer that. We do get emails, from people just spontaneously. And truthfully, sponsors need to have some assurance that the people that they're going to be closely connected to have been vetted in some way, that there has been some oversight as to who's making application and what they're like. When there's a family member or a friend in the United States or in our community, then there, you know who it is who's seeking sponsorship. But if that personal connection isn't there, HIAS provides a service of in Europe, in Eastern Europe, to interview one-on-one the individuals who are seeking to leave under this program, this Uniting for Ukraine program. And that's an action step that really helps us know who's going to be coming.
Obviously, this has been going on since you mentioned February in terms of the Russian invasion and everything that's been going on in Ukraine. Have any of the Ukrainians who've had to flee their homes, have any of them been able to come to the La Crosse area and actually settle here as a result of these efforts yet?
We have some people in La Crosse who came actually outside of the efforts of the La Crosse Welcome Circle, people who individually sponsored and took the initiative. We have our first two families arriving tomorrow. Actually, Rabbi is driving over to O'Hare Airport with another person and a van to be able to pick up the two families. It's three adults and three children. So we're having our first welcome.
Wow. I know that'll be a very fulfilling experience to see these efforts come to fruition in that way. Are these you mentioned different circumstances being involved in each person's existence in terms of family size and everything like that. How long have you been making preparations for the people who are arriving so soon?
I would say it's been about 3 months. Do you think that's an accurate summary? From when, because they had to get the application process. It's a I-134 is the online application for both the sponsor and for the, they call them beneficiary, the person who's going to travel. And there has to, those forms have to be completed and completed accurately. And then there is a security step. So the U.S. government has to review and accept the application.
Rabbi Brian, you're going to pick these people up. Have you had individual interaction with them at all? Do you know anything about their circumstances, or is it logistical thing at this point?
Not at all. Thomas and I are driving down there. Thomas is a Ukrainian American, and we will drive down there, take turns, pick them up from a 10 o'clock Ukrainian flight, get all their stuff off. We have a big van because they got a lot of suitcases and stuff like that. Probably take them out to dinner because they just came from a 15 or 16 hour flight. Then introduce them to wholesome American food, either Quick Trip or McDonald's, and bring them to their new home. The most exciting thing for us is that there are apartments available, being made available for these newcomers. It's such a blessing to have people step up and open their homes to them.
And you've really opening their homes and providing apartments. I mean, this rents are high right now, and the inventory, even if you can afford it, isn't always available. What has that been like, Rabbi, trying to find housing for these people?
Well, you know, we have the same issue, Ezra, with homelessness. As you know, 200 people have been moved out of the park on the river, Huska Park, and they're now trying to find indoor shelter when it's 40 degrees outside. The sponsors for months have stepped up to provide apartments. It'll be rent-free for a while until they start bringing money in. We're going to help them. I'm so grateful for Cooley Cap, the organization that has a 501c3 designation. They're going to collect money, so we've got quite a few donations. They're going to give the deposits to these people who will eventually need to pay rent and food and gasoline. We have gift cards people donated for those various expenses. It has been such a blessing that people have stepped up to help out here.
There are the couple of families arriving, the couple of people that are arriving tomorrow. But tell me about other work in the pipeline, Jan. Do you have a goal of how many people you're trying to serve ultimately?
No, it's going to be easiest if everyone doesn't come at once. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I think we're going to have capacity for maybe a dozen families eventually. But we don't know what the demand will be. There are quite a few Ukrainians who have been displaced and are in La Crosse right now, and they're associated with their blood relatives who are Ukrainians who are residents. But one family sponsored many different individuals through this 134 Uniting for Ukraine program. So I guess I haven't counted, but I think there are probably about a dozen people who are here for a variety of reasons, or in this Winona, La Crosse area. And then we'll have our six newcomers tomorrow.
Can I add something to that, Ezra?
Oh, yes.
We're not alone. Madison, Milwaukee, other cities in Wisconsin are making these kind of efforts. We just got an early head start on it, but they are moving along to bring people in. It wasn't like the government sponsored, bringing over Afghan. And this is taking some, like you said, grassroots effort. And it's so wonderful that people are stepping up in all the cities, Wisconsin, Twin Cities. It looks like they're going to take on about 10 people this month. So people are opening up. Some churches actually have a rectory, you know, a place, an apartment where the priest or pastor might have lived, and they don't maintain it anymore. That's also a place where people, but you're right about the rents, Ezra. Anything within a couple of miles of either Mayo Clinic or Gunderson or University of Wisconsin and Viterbo, the rents are huge. And these people have to find good jobs before they can start paying rent.
And that's part of the early stage efforts is to encourage people how to apply for work permits, Social Security card, and how to get attached to like Workforce Connections and other services to help find work. And also, I think the informal network, the community network, because I think there are openings in lacrosse. And I think these people are coming with educations and skills. And so I think we're talking about a situation that maybe it'll take 2 months, maybe 3 months. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than 3 months before people get work.
Can I add something,
yes,
Ezra?
Certainly.
We have one of the people is experienced in HVAC, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning. They're looking for 100 people to work at Trane Corporation, big manufacturer of residential and corporate, air conditioning and heating systems. They need people with these skills. Now, we're going to help them learn English, both WTC, you know, our technical school here, as well as UWL offer classes for, for ESL, for people who need to learn English. So, you know, we're ready. If they want to work, we're going to help them.
That sounds really great. We're talking to Rabbi Brian Searle. He's the rabbi at the Congregation Sons of Abraham in La Crosse and part of the La Crosse Welcome Circle, which is the subject of our conversation today. Also with us is Jan Gallagher, another member of the La Crosse Welcome Circle. And they've been talking about their new organization's efforts to help people who find themselves in need of somewhere to go after they've had to flee war in their home country of Afghanistan. That's our conversation right now on Newsmakers, and it'll continue in just a moment. If you would like to get in touch with our program, you can reach out to us. Our email is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thanks very much for joining us. Our conversation is all about the La Crosse Welcome Circle, which is a new effort underway to help refugees from the Ukraine, who are coming here having fled their country as they've been dealing with war in their country for going on a year now, not quite a year. And with us are Rabbi Brian Searle and Jan Gallagher. And you talked about some of the other areas of Wisconsin where efforts like this are going on, Rabbi. But before you mentioned over 100 different Welcome Circle type organizations that exist. Tell me about that network of organizations.
We should know that HIAS, which stood originally for Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, HIAS, was originally put together in the 1880s to help those people who were suffering pogroms and being killed and burned out of their homes to flee all over the world, not just to the United States. And they stood up really well for them. They've been doing that ever since. People from Haiti, people from Nicaragua, people from Central America that need to escape from horrible situations, people stuck in Poland, as an example, with 5 or 10 people in the apartment, and they need to start a life. They want to get started. So there are 146 of these around the country. Some are ahead of us, most aren't, because we just finished settling all the Afghan refugees last year. So now we have a new one, which is heavily grassroots, this effort to bring in Ukrainians and help them adjust to American life.
You talked about the organization HIAS that was founded all those years ago. What different ways, Jan? I don't know how familiar you are with all of this either, but either one of you could answer. What are the different ways that people might have seen the work of HIAS through the years?
Well, you know, I hadn't, but it was known to Rabbi and his congregation because of the origins of the group. But I didn't know about it, and I can tell you I'm very impressed. I think what's happened is that it's been decades of experience understanding the needs of the traveler, of the stranger. And I've had a real respect for this approach that they have developed. It really honors and encourages us, actually, in a code of conduct to be very careful not to be, you know, egocentric or ethnocentric, but to really try to understand a different culture, to have respect for privacy, to honor and listen well, to honor what they say and need, that they need, not to put our own ideas on them. I mean, there are a lot of takeaways, to tell you the truth, that really apply to any number of strangers who come to your community and need a welcome, but a welcome that's a welcome that is sincere and not loaded with personal goals. You really have to put aside your expectations and listen carefully to what's needed.
We hear a lot of I don't know if this is what you were speaking of specifically, but when people come in to help in times of need, sometimes it seems well motivated, but it's almost like they develop a bit of a savior complex or something like that. And I'm here to show you the way or something like that. And it sounds like this organization has done work in advance of that to kind of make sure that people approach it with the actions that match their, you know, the well-meaningness of their intentions.
That's exactly it. I've really been impressed in learning from HIAS. They have a very extensive website. In fact, we could suggest to the listener, the website is HIAS.org, and just loaded with information about this subject.
Rabbi Brian, what about those efforts that HIAS has been involved in through the many, many, many decades that they've been around? What are those? How might people have recognized those efforts in their communities over the years?
Well, I have to speak very personally about that, Ezra. My grandfather and grandmother escaped from Kishinev in 1898 or 1900. There were government-sponsored pogroms to burn down Jewish homes, steal all their goods and throw them out. And my grandparents got the heck out of there, and HIAS brought them to New York City. So I am alive today because they had the guts to leave their ancestral home where things were great until this government-sponsored riot took place. So so I have very personal investment in it. But we also know that HIAS has really worked hard for, in the beginning, where in the past several decades, brought in people from Vietnam. And as you know, the Hmong people, both here throughout Wisconsin, we have quite a big Hmong community here, as well as in the Twin Cities. And they were very active in bringing these people over and helping them get established right away. It's like Jan said, they've got a system and it works, and we don't have to, you know, reinvent the wheel to make this a successful journey for people and to have them become Wisconsinites, you know. So for Ukraine, it's okay because it's cold in Ukraine too. If they're coming from Haiti, believe me, this is not a place they'd want to come to.
Well, I remember that very conversation when people were coming, as you mentioned, from Afghanistan a year or so ago, and they were not accustomed to how cold it would get, I remember. I remember hearing calls from some of the charitable organizations that were working with them, Catholic Charities and others here in town were asking, please, winter jackets are very much needed because these people are experiencing these like 40 degree temperatures for the first time. And I remember thinking, oh my, just wait till February. That is, that's going to be a real wake up call.
Ezra, you're so right. Because what happened was, we had all these people come from, like I said, Laos, Cambodia, and this organization was there to help these people. What happened the last 2 years? You had 15,000 people at Camp Fort McCoy in Sparta. Almost none of them had warm coats, gloves, boots, and especially the Madison community, Lutheran Social Services, Catholic Services, and the Jewish organization pulled together thousands of coats and clothes and helped them make the adjustment. So people are stepping up, not just thoughts and prayers. We know thoughts and prayers are nice, but it's better to step up and help these people eat and find a house and job.
Go ahead, Jan.
Well, yeah, it's all of that. And then it's the additional things. You can imagine the first few weeks, first few months, you know, you're getting your kids enrolled in school, getting the vaccinations that are needed and the school records, or to the process of finding a job. It could be easy, but it might not be easy. So, you know, you can just imagine the chaos. So all we can do to grease the way, make it an easier transition, that we're really, really looking to do that. We've had quite a few people ask what they can do to help. And we say, well, really, there you can volunteer. And we, as soon as someone indicates an interest in volunteering, we interview to try to understand what it is, that the special gifts that they have and the kind of time that they have and so forth. People can decide to sponsor, or maybe work with their church group or some other group that they're involved in and come together to sponsor and share the responsibility in some ways. And then, of course, it can be a donation. And we have a website set up with Cooley Cap is our fiscal agent. They're a 501c3, so any donation is tax deductible. It's traceable. It's you know, it's a good smooth system for a new organization like ours. And so Cooley Cap has been terrific. So we have a link on our website where people can donate online, or they can donate by sending in a check.
And what's that website if people are interested in finding it?
Well, we're trying to get it easier on Google. You can find it if you Google it, the La Crosse Welcome Circle, but it's not popping up at the top necessarily. So
it'll take a while, yes.
Yeah, you have to kind of stay with it. It's a direct connection to interfaithleaders.com/La Crosse Welcome Circle. Have I got that right?
Yes, but I think we could send it to Ezra by email so he can have it available.
And I'd be happy to pass that along to anybody who gets in touch about it. But I'm sure that people could just as easily, if they were to call Cooley Cap and say that they're interested in supporting, I'm sure Cooley Cap could make sure they're directed to the right place too.
Yeah, they're welcome. Yeah,
and we hope the end of this week we're going to get that website easier to find, just by lacrossewelcomecircle.com.
Yeah, rather than being parked on somebody else's website, yeah, we'll have our own.
Well, that'll be something else to look forward to as well. We're talking to Rabbi Brian Searle and Janice Gallagher today about a new effort in our area called the La Crosse Welcome Circle, working to rehome in some cases and provide resources for people who are Ukrainian who've had to leave their homes as that country is just embroiled in the worst kind of circumstances as a result of war. And our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you've missed what we've been talking about and you'd like to listen to it, or if you'd like to find some of our other programs, they're all on our website. You can find our archive of shows at wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios at UW La Crosse. Thank you very much for listening to our conversation today about the La Crosse Welcome Circle. I'm very pleased to be joined by Rabbi Brian Searle and Jan Gallagher, and we've been talking about their new organization's efforts to help people who are displaced by war in Ukraine and who are finding their way to the States for a short period of time, for a long period of time, and have various needs, some of which are known, some of which are yet unknown, and how they're sort of standing in the gap on behalf of those people. I want to ask Rabbi, it's not lost on me the biblical references that come to mind when you're talking about how you have gotten involved in this. You hear about, you know, people, the people of Israel being strangers in the land of Egypt, the people of Israel wandering for decades in the desert as they're being guided through the desert by clouds and fire and all of those biblical references that come to mind. How important is this project for you as a matter of an expression of faith?
Well, you have to know that I've given some talks in the last couple of weeks about this, speaking to church groups, because they know the quotes. The quotes are not only in the Jewish Bible, the so-called Old Testament, they're in the New Testament. They're in Matthew and in Paul. It says, welcome the stranger, bring them home, not just because they're going to bring you their angels. So it's not, it's nice if they're angels, but open your home to other people. You've got this blessing from God, share it with other people. So that we don't want, we really don't want thoughts and prayers. Everybody gives thoughts and prayers. We want them to give thoughts and prayers and sponsorships and driving them places and helping them interview for jobs. So it's much more practical. Then maybe, the prayers help too, don't get me wrong, but we have such a big interfaith effort here. It's not a Jewish effort. This is so much in the Christian community. I'm so grateful for that.
I think each person involved has a different motivation, I guess, but I think behind it all is a sense of obligation to help our fellow humans in a time of need. And it does kind of reach out to sort of the better spirit to do that. We're also being very careful, however, as much as this is attractive to faith groups, not to push or insist on any kind of religious activity on the part of the newcomers. They're free to join us if they want to in faith activities, but that certainly is not a requirement.
Yeah, not proselytizing, so to speak.
Right. I guess you're saying it better than I am.
Well, I'm curious now. You talked about the different ways that people can help, and just briefly before our last break, I'd like to explore that a little bit more. Talked about the ways that people could contribute financially to what's going on. Are there specific goods or services that you are particularly looking for people to provide at this point?
The biggest ticket items and the hardest, at least in the first couple of months, will be affordable housing and transportation, because those two are so basic to stability. The clothing, we don't know at this point if we'll be putting out a call for clothing or anything like that. I think it's more the core basics of housing and transportation.
And also, I'd say helping people look for jobs. I really enjoy doing mock interviews and helping them with their English. That's an area that I think I can help. I've done it over the years, hired people, and we'll help them find jobs. So I'm very excited about that opportunity to make them to Wisconsinites, and lacrosse people, find a job right down the street, making 100,000 donuts a night at Quick Trip or something else like that.
So what are you hearing about through the various networks that you're involved in communicating with? What are you hearing about the circumstances of friends, relatives, family members of these folks that you're trying to help, who have either decided to try to stay in Ukraine, or who, as you mentioned, in the case of many of the military-aged men over there, they cannot leave Ukraine?
I don't know what firsthand information we have, except to know that that's part of the distress that many of the travelers are suffering, is to know that their family members are still in danger. Their spouse may be in danger. Their father may be in danger. So we know that until that war is ended, there will not be any rest for the family and friends who have left someone behind.
So as you're trying to figure out how you can help these people, I know you said there are six individuals who are arriving very soon, and other people who are in the process, one stage or another of the process, of making application to come here, or they're in touch with your organization. Do you have a hope of how many people you are interested in helping? Let's say, like, can you take? Are you trying to set up circumstances where you could help like one new family a month, or a certain number over the course of a year?
I think, you know, I don't think we've got an absolute number, but I think we're certainly prepared to help 12 new families. But, you know, that will depend on what the demand is. And you know, I think as we ask, I think we can build capacity if that happens.
Rabbi Brian, you talked about all the different places in the state where people are pitching in to help out in a similar way that the La Crosse Welcome Circle is doing. Do these
Yes.
organizations have communication with each other on any kind of regular basis?
I regret to say we're so new at this that we haven't done that, but I would jump at that opportunity because we can learn from each other what they're doing successfully and what doesn't work. Milwaukee and Madison come to mind. The smaller communities are the Fox Valley, you know, Appleton, et cetera. So, and what I love about it, especially Ezra, this is a interfaith effort. It's not a Jewish thing. It's not a Christian thing. People don't care what background we got. Just bring them over and help them find a life here.
And, you know, I think the message is a good one to send out to your entire audience, listening audience, Ezra. The model is clearly laid out. So if there's a smaller community, a Viroqua, Westby, Sparta, Toma, where it's easier to have your own welcome circle than to try to coordinate with our welcome circle, we'd be very happy to explain how we got started and steer the interested people to the right places.
Yes, sir, excuse me. I forgot to mention Eau Claire, which is where I'm sitting right now. Eau Claire has also made a big effort in their interfaith community to welcome. I don't know if it's a welcome circle, but I know that they're making real efforts here.
Now, in terms of your specific organization, you're affiliated with HIAS. Is that if someone was interested in learning more about that? I know, Jan, you mentioned that anybody could go to their website and read a lot of the information that they have, the advice that they have for doing this kind of work. But as far as that more official affiliation, did HIAS approach you? Did you approach HIAS? How did that relationship start?
We approached HIAS, there's a little bit more oversight to the welcome circle because they want to make sure that we're setting up. We're going to use that name, and we're going to call ourselves an affiliate. We're going to make sure that we do things that match the HIAS standard. So people can learn on their own about that. There's another site that I think I can mention that might be useful too, Ezra.
Good.
And that is, you know, this Uniting for Ukraine is a very unique program. The federal government set it up, it's different from other immigration or other programs that exist. And the information is available. It's called Uniting for Ukraine. It's a 2-year program, and their application process is online, and the application process and background information is available at uscis.gov/Ukraine. So it's uscis.gov Ukraine. And that will give your listeners direct access to the program, this 2-year program, and what the guidelines are, and what does it take to set up a sponsorship relationship.
So that's that kind of addresses one of the questions I was hoping to bring up, which is when people are allowed to enter the United States, there's always kind of a ticking clock on that sort of thing. So this program gives them 2 years. And what happens at the end of that 2 years? Do you know whether there's an opportunity for them to try to renew that, or whether there are other immigration programs that they could become part of if they should choose to try to stay in the U.S. after that?
You're correct in saying it is an additional step, and HIAS recommends that immigration lawyer be consulted and to understand what opportunities might exist. But it's not expected that people will stay, but it is possible to stay.
Yeah. So I and understandably, like many of these people would really love to be able to go back home at the end of 2 years or even before that. Before I even ask, I already know. Like there's just no way to anticipate whether that's going to be possible, is there?
You're correct.
Yeah, Russia just poured another million reserve soldiers into it, and a million men rushed out of the border of Russia as soon as they heard about the draft. So Russia is really pulling not people who are ready to fight. They're really he's really committed to destroy this country of Ukraine.
I know that people that your congregation has been affiliated with, Rabbi, have connections in Ukraine and different ways that this has affected them. How are they doing? I mean, as just local people with connections to something just so horrific going on, how are your congregants reacting to all this?
Two of our congregants were born and raised in Ukraine, went to college and graduate school there, and they are architects. And they started a business here in La Crosse years ago, and they've been watching with dismay from afar as people were getting killed and homes were being destroyed. And they did a lot here. They've raised organic produce to send there, a lot of food that's being distributed, especially in Crimea, which has been occupied by Russia for several years now. It's amazing how the support we're giving them is so welcome to them.
I'm trying to just imagine what those people must be going through. And in hearing it, I and others just, like, there's that instinct to want to help. But one wonders, like, what little thing I can do that will actually contribute to the solution. But it sounds like this could be, this La Crosse Welcome Circle could be part of that solution. Jan, why don't you remind us again, if people are interested in helping out, how they're able to do that?
Well, we are keeping a track of people who will volunteer and what their skill sets are or their interest is. So I'm actually personally keeping track of the people who have offered to volunteer. And we also know that people can sponsor or join with others to share the responsibility in sponsoring. Each individual Ukraine person coming into our country under Uniting for Ukraine must be sponsored. So that means each child, each adult, each infant needs a sponsor. And so it is important piece, but not the only piece. And of course, sometimes the only thing at the moment is to contribute some money. And so we do have a way to donate and have it tax deductible and have it audited. And it's through the 501c3 nonprofit organization, Cooley Cap. And Cooley Cap will receive the money and also distribute the money. We're having each of the Ukrainian families have a budget, so we understand their financial condition. We will be doing that one of the first things when they arrive tomorrow. And so that we understand how dire their cash need is, or sometimes it's not that dire and we can relax a little bit. But we'll have a budget for clothing, we'll have a budget for food, we'll have a budget for school supplies, and so forth. So a donation of cash by way of Cooley Cap will really help a lot.
And if there's either that or the people who have other resources or expertise to offer, you mentioned it might be difficult to find the website at the moment, but if people reach out to Newsmakers, I'll certainly pass that on. And our email address is newsmakers@wpr.org. It's newsmakers@wpr.org. lacrossestudios.org. You talked about every single person in the family needing a sponsor. Does each person need a separate sponsor, or is it just that there has to be sponsorship paperwork for each person who is traveling to the U.S. and one U.S. based sponsor could sponsor multiple people who are traveling to the U.S.?
Yes, thank you for that clarification. It's true. One sponsor, it's usually a family, American family, a citizen, sponsors the Ukrainian. And if their income level is high enough, because part of the application is to indicate your financial ability to help as needed. And so if the income for the sponsor is high enough, two people or three people could be on the same application. And it's not terribly high. It's just short of $30,000 per person that you have to show on the application that you make that kind of income.
It's a very interesting process and really interesting and sounds like very necessary work that you're involved in. The La Crosse Welcome Circle is the effort that we've been talking about today on Newsmakers. Our guests are Janice Gallagher and Rabbi Brian Searle. Janice, thank you very much for joining us today on the program.
Thank you, Ezra, very much for the invitation and the opportunity.
Certainly. Rabbi Brian, thank you very much, too.
Always a treat to talk with you, Ezra. Thank
you. And safe travels tomorrow, by the way, as well.
Well, we're going to, a dangerous place, I-90 in, in Chicago. So.
Well, I wish you a safe journey and we'll talk to you soon again here on Newsmakers. This is, of course, Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you've missed part of the conversation today and would like to listen back to it, or if you'd like to find a previous episode, you can find all of them at WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. And while we've been speaking about people leaving Ukraine and coming to the United States, it puts me in mind of this podcast that's been recently released by WPR. It's called WPR Reports Uprooted, Cuban in Wisconsin. And it's about people who immigrated from Cuba to the United States through an effort called the Mariel Boat Lift. It happened in 1980. And the podcast goes into just all kinds of great detail about the political circumstances that led to those people wanting to leave Cuba and then the limited window of time that they were given to legally do that, and the United States government working to make it happen as well. And like 15,000 Cubans were lifted from during the Mariel boat lift and brought to Fort McCoy. More than that came to the United States, but 15,000 of them were brought to Fort McCoy here in Wisconsin, in Sparta. And quite a number of those people settled in the La Crosse area, still live here to this day, and some of them are featured on this podcast, WPR Reports Uprooted, Cuban in Wisconsin. And the podcast is hosted by WPR's Maureen McCollum of Wisconsin Life and the former host of this show, I might add. And Dr. Omar Granados from the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. And the reason I bring this podcast up, I'd love you to listen to it. And you can do that by searching for WPR Reports in your favorite podcast platform of choice. Or you can go to WPR.org/uprooted and listen to all the episodes there. But we're having a really cool event on campus here at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse next week on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday at 7 o'clock at UWL in the Student Union. We're having a presentation. Maureen will be here, and Dr. Granados will be here as well. They'll be talking to some of the guys that participated in the podcast, some of the Cuban people who were part of the Mario boat lift, who now live here in the La Crosse area, and we'd love to see you there. You'll have an opportunity to meet all these people, to ask questions during the presentation. You'll hear some clips from the podcast and see some behind the scenes photos and a whole lot more. And the event is totally free. You can sign up to let us know you're coming by going to WPR.org/presents. That's WPR.org/presents. I'd love to see you this coming Tuesday. Of course, there are a number of ways you can hear Newsmakers each week. You can listen to us Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. You can listen to us Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Production help this week from Kate Spranger. Thank you very much, Kate. I appreciate it. I'm Ezra Wall. Please join me again next time for another Newsmakers here on Wisconsin Public Radio.